I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical bill expert, finding savings can seem impossible. Well, HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. So start saving with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider. That's HealthLock.com.
As America continues to embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion, we've seen the death of meritocracy. And in exchange, the checking of boxes. The result of all of that is a country falling apart, things not functioning as well as they used to. So how has that impacted the military? We're going to talk to a friend of mine, Amber Smith. She's out with a new book called Unfit to Fight, How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. She served as an Army combat helicopter pilot and air mission commander in the 101st Airborne Division. She flew two combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. She also spent time working at the Department of Defense. So she's seen both sides of the military, from boots on the ground and then also in a leadership position working at the Department of Defense. So we're going to get her take on how woke policies are destroying the military. Are we ready for a big war? Why are those recruitment numbers so down? And what role did the COVID vaccine mandate have on morale and on recruitment? We're going to get into all of it. It's shocking, important stuff. I was proud to write an endorsement of this book as well. So stay tuned for my friend Amber Smith with a really important book, Unfit to Fight, How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. Well, Amber, it's so great to have you on the show. I'm so proud of you out with this new book. I can't wait to get into it. And just so happy for you and proud of you.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. Looking forward to it.
Well, so this book comes at a good time because, I mean, the world's a mess. I mean, we've got, war in Europe, war in the Middle East. And then we have a military that doesn't seem up to the task. Why did you decide to write this book?
So I served in the military as a Kiowa Warrior helicopter pilot in both Iraq and Afghanistan. And then I also, fast forward a decade plus later, I served as the deputy assistant to the Secretary of Defense in the Trump administration. And so I got to see sort of the inner workings of, things at the top inside the E-ring of the Pentagon and sort of the priorities that were happening with leadership there. And so I took sort of both of those experience were the exact opposite, ends, one operational military experience and one more of like leadership and policy. And then in 2022, the chief of staff of the Army went and testified on Capitol Hill, and he was testifying about the Army missing their recruitment numbers by 25%. And I listened to him give every single excuse except reality of why people weren't joining the military. And this came, this was right in the middle of the COVID vaccine mandates, and this was after the horrific fall of Afghanistan and the evacuation from Kabul. And so he sat up there and he talked about how it was obesity and mental and physical limitations that exclude people from military service, which those do exclude people from military service. But those have also been a problem for decades now. And so, and the military, you know, for the most part, was able to meet their numbers. And so instead of talking about the reason why the Army wasn't able to get their numbers from the percentage they are able to recruit from, he chose to just, you know, throw some talking points out there that we see generals use in every war, every issue with the military. And I was just like, I think the American people need to know the truth about what's going on in the military right now. So I decided to write my book, Unfit to Fight.
You know, why do you think, because I've had I've interviewed a bunch of, you know, veterans, and, you know, there's always this frustration with leadership. So why do you think there's such a disconnect between, you know, boots on the ground versus the people in Washington and leadership?
So there is a drastic disconnect. You hit the nail on the head between what operationally, like people who are there on the ground, the reality that is there, and then the Washington, D.C. air-conditioned PowerPoint fancy offices at the Pentagon. So it's a massive cultural difference. When people work their way up in the ranks, then they get to D.C., and the culture that has been facilitated it has turned senior military leaders into yes men. If you look at, and then in doing so, when they stand by being yes men, they then realize that you can fail up, because we're seeing, you know, good qualified people who don't want to play this game are just like, I'm going to get out. And so that limits the pool for promotion even less. But if you look back to World War II, generals, you know, military officers were given a certain amount of months in combat to go win battles. If they couldn't do it, if they weren't effective leaders in combat, then they got fired and they got replaced by someone that could. Fast forward to Vietnam, you see this massive change happen where if a general was fired, the Department of Defense suddenly viewed that as a black eye on the department as a whole, instead of as a failure of that individual officer. And so what did they do? They instead circled the wagons and they stopped firing people. And they just, you know, maybe they moved a job position, but they didn't want what they saw as a very negative PR move when they would fire people. So that led to a culture of no accountability. It led to, you know, not the right people getting promoted with the right experience. And it created this culture where you very rarely in today's military see a general officer getting fired for performance. You may see them getting fired for conduct, personal conduct, but not for performance in terms of the way they're actually able to do their job. So all of that has led to sort of this terrible leadership crisis in the military right now with, as you mentioned, we're, you know, on the brink of World War III, it seems like every other week. We need some good, strong leadership, which is what is lacking in the military right now.
I guess, how ready are we right now to fight potentially a big war?
Well, we aren't, in terms of force strength, our numbers aren't there. For years now, the military continues to, in most of the branches, the Marines still are able to get their numbers, but the Air Force, the Navy, and the Army especially is hurting. And you see them do different programs in terms of trying to meet those numbers and get them up. But usually the result is lowering the standard, which is not helpful when it comes to readiness. We have the technology. We have the experience. But what is missing is a sort of the purpose, the focus on what the mission is. So when I served in the military, it was every single training exercise we did was to make us better, to ensure that we had the tools, the equipment, the experience and education to succeed at accomplishing the mission. It was very straightforward. That's what we did. We trained to ensure that we could fight and win wars. Fast forward to today, and you're seeing the priority, which I get into a lot with my book, being shifted from focusing on the mission. And now it's focused on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and climate change, and how it can be a greener force, and stand down days for Secretary Austin saying that white extremism is the biggest internal threat that the military faces, and unconscious bias training, and, you know, making sure that you're using the proper pronouns, and transgenders are getting the healthcare that they want. And so all of that that I just listed is a distraction from the military, or a distraction from the mission. You don't see Russia and China and Iran focusing on all those things they just listed. Instead, their military is focused on how are we going to fight and defeat our enemy. That's what their focus is on. And so we have, I do think it's some significant complacency, not only in the Biden administration itself, but the leadership at the Department of Defense.
We have to take a quick break. More on how woke policies are destroying our military.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
You know, before I want to dig in further into, you know, how woke the military has gotten. But before we do, you said something that has stayed in my mind, that the Marines have been able to meet their numbers, but the others have not. Why do you think the Marines have been able to keep their numbers and others have struggled? What do you think's behind that?
So the Marine Corps is a smaller branch, and they have always been focused on the way that they recruit and the way that they sell the Marine Corps image. They're tough, they're hard, they get dirty, they shoot guns, but they're a team. They have, a joint purpose, and they do it together. And that's what, when the 17-year-old or even younger than that, when 12-year-old boys are, you know, playing army outside or playing soldier outside, they want to go shoot guns. They want to get dirty in the mud. They want to rough and tough, you know, living outside, going to the field. That's what the Marine Corps sells to this day. If you compare an army recruitment video versus a Marine Corps video, you know, the Army pushes these like super soft, like technical side of things, like you know, go work on a computer all day long. And the Marine Corps videos are like a guy climbing rock climbing, you know, a mountain, and then fighting a dragon on the top with a sword. Like, that's what people, like young men, want to go do. And so it's, I think the results are glaringly obvious. People want to go, young men want to go join a service where they get to be patriotic and they get to go do hard things and learn from it and be a part of a team that loves America. And sadly, when people are joining the other branches, they're, you know, that's not what they're getting today.
Why did you decide to enlist?
I watched 9/11 happen while I was in college, and I grew up in a very patriotic family. I loved America. I knew, I was taught just how important our freedoms are and why they're worth preserving. So I loved America. I loved everything, you know, the freedoms and liberties that we got to enjoy every day. And I had traveled, and I knew that America was different. It's, you know, not in, there's nowhere else on the planet like America. And so when we got attacked on 9/11, I watched it unfold. I knew that I wanted to serve my country, and I loved flying. And I went and I talked to all the different military branches, and the Army happened to have the helicopter program that was a good fit for me. So that's the branch that I pursued. But, you know, that post 9/11 patriotism that we saw, that bump in recruitment where the country was united there for a short while after 9/11, that's gone. Unfortunately, the youth today, after, you know, growing up in the public school system, which is teaching alternative history and talking about how America is an oppressor and the system is rigged against them, that's, you know, young Americans are saying, why do I want to serve for that? And so it's changed fairly rapidly in terms of the generational differences between the post 9/11 wars and the people who are wanting to step up and defend and fight America, fight for America. And now what we're seeing, it's actually, people should be very concerned about that because the all volunteer force has been effective since the end of Vietnam, but it is not a guarantee. And I think people, I think society has become complacent with an all-volunteer force.
Well, there does seem to be, you know, just a lack of patriotism in the country. Do you think sort of that lack of purpose as a country and lack of unity has played into these low recruitment numbers?
Well, I think that it's sort of the, I think it is a lack of patriotism being taught at a very young age. And I think that, you know, parents get used to a certain lifestyle in America and it being comfortable and it being easy. And so that history and being taught that, you know, freedom isn't a guarantee, isn't happening in households as much as it used to be. And so, I don't know, you attach that to an economy where people are able to get jobs. You do see recruitment numbers kind of come and go when the economy is great and there's other options. But it honestly, it's not like this massive difference. That's another thing the military sometimes wants to blame it on, is the economy. But I think it's more of, we live in the age of social media, the age where communication is instantaneous, and people are seeing grievances from service members. They're seeing sort of the leadership failures. People are posting about it online. They're seeing the mold infested barracks that they have to live in. They're seeing the fall of Afghanistan and the 20 years that service members sacrificed for in that war and were essentially lied to for years and years and years from leadership, then just be thrown away. You know, their interpreters that they worked with get left behind to the Taliban, you know. So people are seeing some of that. And I think that they're saying, that's not what I want. Why would I go do that? Why would I not go pursue something in the civilian world? And even, even like the recruitment usually comes, like, at least people think, from majority red states. So they're like, oh, these patriotic people who want to serve and they're conservative. That's not today's military anymore. These patriotic individuals who may want to serve are seeing some of these problems in real time. And they're saying, and their families included are saying, maybe it's time to pursue something different. Maybe you should pursue a different career path, even if military service would have been something that they pursued. Another big problem is the military has relied heavily on the veteran population being sort of an organic recruiter. And in the last couple of decades, military service has almost become a family business, where if your parents or grandparents served, you know, your children and their children are much more likely to serve. But it's down significantly in terms of who is willing to promote military service from a veteran family to their kids. And it's because of some of those problems, myself included. Like, the military that we served in doesn't exist anymore. And so it's like, do you want your kids to go do that? It used to be like, yeah, everybody knows the military is hard and adversity is good for you. Like, it teaches you many life lessons, but the positives used to sort of outweigh the negatives. And I don't know, from the people that I talked to, the research I've done for my book, that isn't the case anymore. Of every single person that I interviewed for my book, the dozens and dozens of active duty service members, and then recent veterans, so people who have just gotten out in the last year or 2 years or so, or retired, I asked the same question at the end of every single interview, and it was, would you recommend military service to your children, or, you know, children in your sphere of influence, your community? And every single person without hesitation said no. One person said maybe the Air National Guard, but that right there should terrify every single American, that the military, the Department of Defense, has lost its veterans. And that is absolutely crazy that is where we are today, that veterans aren't recommending service.
What reasons did they give you?
So, the COVID vaccine mandates really pulled back the curtain for a lot of people serving, and they saw an institution that many had devoted their lives to. They believed in the system. They believed in what they were doing. They believed in their leaders and their commanders above them so much that, you know, you follow them into battle. You do what you're told. You charge a hilltop with, you know, bullets flying at you because your commander tells you that that's what you have to go do, and have that trust. When the COVID mandate came down, that severely severed that trust. I don't think it can be repaired with this generation that experienced that. And because they saw, you know, your oath is to uphold lawful orders, not to uphold unlawful orders. And that's exactly what we saw with the COVID mandate. So that was a significant part of it. And then it destroyed a lot of fantastic service members. Like, it's actually heartbreaking what the military did to those service members. What's like crazy is that those are the leaders that the military needs right now. And instead they just kicked them out to the curb. So it's that combined with like the leadership issues that I told you out of Washington, like the double standard, the two-tier justice system, Secretary Austin, you know, like look at what happened with him with, his recent medical issues, where he just went AWOL for a week, didn't tell even his deputy to, you know, take assumption of command while he was under anesthesia. It's just like, if a private did that, if a private had a cancer diagnosis and didn't tell his commander and went and got treatment for it, like he would get charged with a crime and face UCMJ action. And Secretary Austin goes to Capitol Hill, you know, gets asked the same question by members of Congress, and he just sits there with his smirk and is like, no, nothing's going to happen to me. And I know nothing's going to happen to me, which is why I get away with everything that, you know, he does. So that type of like leadership failures, that's not the way the military used to be when with leadership. Like, leadership used to be you lead by example, and that's not the leadership that they're getting.
I could see how that would be, you know, really frustrating. You know, you sign up to serve your country, and one, you're not treated well, and then two, just the overt double standard. Got to take a quick commercial break. More with Amber Smith on the other side.
But first, it's been over 6 months since the brutal attack by Hamas and our brothers and sisters in Israel. Since then, the attacks on Israel have increased, with Iran and its proxies launching an attack of hundreds of drones and missiles. The International Fellowship of Christians and Jews is on the ground now, addressing all urgent needs. And that's why I'm partnering with IFCJ today. Your life-saving donation today can help provide security needs, like placing bomb shelters in communities in Israel that need it the most. When the siren goes off, people have 15 seconds or less to get to safety. IFCJ has helped renovate and install nearly 3,000 bomb shelters to date. As Israel and her people live with the harsh reality of terror every single day, your support will help address emergency security needs such as food and utility equipment for bomb shelters, flak jackets, and other essentials for the people of Israel. We're asking listeners to give $50 or any amount to help provide life-saving aid. Visit supportifcj.org. That's one word, supportifcj.org.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
You're a mom. Would you want your kids to serve?
So this was hard for me to, you know, come to the position that I'm in, that I do have now. And because I love my military service. The military gave me so much. I learned everything that I learned in the military, you know, has helped shape who I am today. And I'm grateful for my service and the opportunities that I was given. But like I say, like, the military that I knew and served in is no more. And so no, my answer is no. Until the military can fix itself and get itself right, where it's a meritocracy again, and it's focused on accomplishing the mission, then no, I hope at someday in the future, my mind can be changed back. But in today's military, the way that it is, no.
I guess, when did this breakdown, you know, begin, where you sort of, where the meritocracy and the military started to erode? Like, what could you date that back to?
So the policy changes really sort of happened or started to happen in the Obama administration. And it was, it sort of like happened under the radar though, because you saw sort of some of the woke ideology like happening in different facets of society, like the public education system, maybe the medical system. But no one really paid attention to the military because, like I said, most of the recruitment comes from red states. You think of the military, you think of patriotism, you think of the military historically. And so you're like, that's never going to happen in the military. It's just not what they're about. They fight and win wars. Why would any of this apply to them? And so I don't think anybody really paid attention. And so, which is actually bad, very bad news, because it allowed it to sort of evolve culturally without anybody paying attention, including Congress. And so you had some of the policy changes under the Obama administration were transgender policy, openly allowing transgenders to serve. And then also a big one was removing the ban on women in combat positions and in special operations. And as with any sort of policy that comes out of Washington, D.C., you know, you write a 2-page paper on it about how it'll be done and the expectations around the policy change. And it sounds like, okay, that makes sense on paper. The implementation are two different things and they go south quickly. And you saw then when Trump came into office, he reversed the transgender policy. There was this massive outroar within the Department of Defense and, you know, within the media and Washington, D.C. politics. And then when Biden came into office, that is when it was just like the floodgates were opened in terms of these changes, the executive orders that came down, forcing priorities in DEI, critical race theory being taught at the service academies, the transgender policies that were even more significant than they were under the Obama administration, and focusing on climate change as, you know, the number one national security threat. And so it happened fairly quickly. Once Biden took office, they wasted no time whatsoever. And it's done considerable amount of damage that even if the administration changes in 2025, you will be able to reverse some of the policy changes, but the like culturally, the damage that has been done is going to take a generation.
You know, and you mentioned under Obama, you know, in 2013, women achieved full status in the military when they were granted the right to serve in direct ground combat roles. Of course, you were a combat helicopter pilot. How does sort of that direct ground combat roles, allowing women to be in that role, how does that sort of change things?
So,
or how did it change things, rather, since it's, you know, we're talking past tense here?
Yeah, when you look at when Secretary Carter changed, reversed the ban on women serving in these ground combat positions that women had been excluded from, actually, except aviation. Aviation was the only combat position where women were allowed. It did change some things, but for the purpose of the change, they said that people would be put in these ground positions based on merit. If a female was not up to standard, there would be no quotas. There would be no battle buddies having to, like, if one female was good enough to be in the infantry and she could pass everything, all the standards and be there because she wanted to, you know, be in the infantry, you know, there would be no battle buddy where the second female couldn't pass those standards, but the female that did make it needed a battle buddy to be with her. Like, there was going to be none of that. It would be standard based. It would be merit. There would be no special treatment. And so on paper, you're like, okay, that makes sense. Like, equal opportunity, no, you know, guarantee of outcome, but you're allowed to try. And I think most people agreed with that I think where the issue came up was especially when women started in ranger school, and there was lots of accusations of the trainers and the course instructors that were claiming special treatment for these women, and that they were being given such an upper hand to men in terms of nutrition training and physical training and being walked along the course prior to the event, which men have never been allowed to do or have. Also where like men, you know, had to pass a certain test prior to, women were allowed to stay in this sort of like pre-buildup phase prior to, and they got to stay in there until they passed. Where if men didn't, then they went home. And so there was sort of this accusation of command influence of special treatment from a general, and where women weren't passing. And then suddenly he went down onto the course, and, you know, it appears that he wanted to be the guy who got to put on his officer evaluation report that he was the commander that had the first female Rangers graduate from Ranger school. And there was a congressman who actually did an investigation to look into this. And believe it or not, when he asked for the records, the Army, first of all, ignored him for months. And then second of all, when they finally did get back to him, they said all records had been destroyed. So stuff like that was a problem. And then so they haven't stuck to the merit base. And I say this as a female who served in the military. That's bad for women. Women want to be judged and scored on merit and, you know, like succeed because they were the best person for the job. They don't want to go in there and receive a bunch of special treatment and have people wonder, you know, why they're there. Did they have somebody look the other way, or are they actually good enough to be there? And, so that's what I say. If like you want to give women equal opportunity, then let them like do it themselves. And sadly, in some cases, not in all cases, that's happening.
And does that put our military at risk though? Because, you know, if you are out there in combat, you don't have time or the ability to take those special considerations, or, you know, to take those, you know, special circumstances into consideration of, oh, this is a woman, we need to care, right? Like you were in combat.
Exactly.
So I mean, doesn't that ultimately put our men and women at risk?
It does. When you lower a standard, someone else is having to pick up that weight. And so, yes, that is a very, very big problem. For example, I'm a big advocate for a gender neutral physical fitness test. I think there should be a mission standard. Like this is the physical requirements to accomplish the mission. It doesn't matter. The mission doesn't change if you're a man or a woman. You still have to be able to, you know, whatever the mission requires. The Army changed their physical fitness test to a gender neutral age neutral test. The secretary, it failed miserably. The Secretary of the Army said under the Biden administration, she said that she was worried that because of the standard of the test, which did, men and women are different, it made it harder for women. But that's okay, because once, like I said, there's a mission standard. She said she thought it was going to hurt recruiting women into the Army, and then it would also damage retaining women. And so what did they do? They lowered the standard. They went back to a gender specific standard, and it was lowered. Like it's like to run a 2 mile run now, a female, it's like 23 minutes or something like that, which is not much of a standard. So like I said, somebody picks up that slack when those standards are lowered, especially on the physical side.
You know, the U.S. Department of Defense was criticized not too long ago for saying diversity is a strategic imperative. strategic imperative, critical to mission readiness and accomplishment. I mean, is that the truth? I mean, you know, everyone I talk to, you know, I've interviewed a ton of veterans, as I mentioned, and everyone has pointed out that, like, you don't take diversity into account when you're out there and you're trying to stay alive and you're fighting the enemy. Like, you don't even think about the fact that, oh, my teammate is, you know, a Christian or, you know, a Jew or Black or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you're just in it together trying to stay alive. You know, and trying to protect one another. So, like, I mean, what do you make of sort of the Department of Defense saying that that is critical to mission readiness and accomplishment?
Well, I think it's a talking point. I think it's the military is, like, just by the nature of the military, is like the biggest melting pot of everything you could ever imagine. Like, it's all there. And it works. And the reason it works is because everybody wears the exact same uniform. Everybody has the same, you know, standards of appearance. And when you go into combat, everybody, you know, everybody's blood is the same color. It's so this force diversity, which is extremely political, and it's an attempt to follow social trends out in society. You often hear the talking point of, like, we want a military that looks like America, or that's what we need in order to be successful. And it's like, actually what we need is a military that can fight and win wars. And the best people who can do that, regardless of what they look like, should be the people doing that. So it's like, the military should, like, they have, in terms of wanting to be fair and representative of everyone, has swung so far in the opposite direction. You see, you know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff now, back when he was in the Air Force, or the top of the Air Force, saying that he thought the pilot corps in the Air Force was too white. And it's just like, why is that a focus? Like, once again, if we get back actually to making sure that the military is a meritocracy, it actually works. And then you have an effective military. When you are lowering those standards, it's going to suffer, and it creates a weak link in the chain. And sooner or later, it's going to break. So meritocracy is our strength.
Got to take a quick commercial break. More with Amber Smith on the other side.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is,
we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Rachel Levine, who's a dude, made history for becoming the first openly transgender four-star officer sworn in as an admiral. How much of that is earned versus to say that, you know, you have that statistic?
It's crazy. It's disrespectful to women. I don't even think that's like a significant enough way to put it. He's not the first female anything. And I'm so sick of these titles being stolen from women, and then the government backing it up. The government's acting as if it is something to be proud of and deserving of these titles. It's, speaking of why people don't want to join the military, like, people are saying that's what America is about today. Like, if the administration and the military can't live in reality with something as basic as being a man and a woman, it's like the rest of it actually makes sense.
You know, obviously you did, you know, a ton of research, and it's personal, right? Because you've served in the military. So you want the military to be better, and to be the best that it can be. What kind of like alarmed you the most in doing research? Is there anything that you found out that you're like, wow, I can't even believe this?
So the transgender and the pride stuff was pretty crazy to read about some of the things that were going on military bases. The withdrawal of Afghanistan was devastating. It is what happened in Afghanistan, and I almost want to use the word cover up afterwards.
And you flew two combat tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, just for context for the listeners. Okay, continue.
Yes.
Just wanted people at home to know that.
Yeah. So the way that not only the withdrawal happened, but the leadership and sort of the second half of the war was handled, which then, you know, played into the way the withdrawal happened and the, you know, ultimate evacuation. It was devastating. And to hear some of the people's stories who were there on the ground, their lives were changed forever because of it. But I think a big one was when you remember the ISIS-K suicide bomber, 13 Americans mm-hmm. were killed. And then afterwards, the United States droned what they called was an ISIS-K target. And they went with that narrative for weeks, even though people started to question it. And it wasn't until the New York Times came out with a video that actually they didn't kill an ISIS-K target. They killed 10 innocent Afghans, an aid worker, and 7 of which were children. And the Department of Defense like refused like to acknowledge that. Even when people were questioning them about it, and it wasn't until that report came out from the New York Times that they finally had to come clean about it. Even just, you know, a little before they finally had to admit it, General Milley publicly was saying that it was a righteous strike. And I think that sort of stance, I think people were like, okay, you lied about this. What else over a 20-year war have you been lying about? And I give so many examples of my book about generals, former Afghan commanders that go testify in front of Congress and talk about a war that didn't exist. They were talking about Afghanistan, but it 100% was not the reality of what was going on the ground in Afghanistan, and just painted a completely different picture just to keep the money flowing. And, you know, they would have continued it as long as they possibly could, in terms of a war that was being mismanaged, as long as they had the funds to do so. So instead, they then went on to mismanage a withdrawal. But it was devastating for the veteran population, and I think for recruitment as well.
You know, as you mentioned, you know, Afghanistan, you know, it really seems like we never kind of had a mission. You know, what was the final mission, you know, right? Like what was the end goal? And, you know, here we're entering with, you know, Ukraine, at least, of just sending endless amounts of money. And it's, you know, I think a lot of people are asking, well, you know, how does Ukraine win this thing? Not that we don't have empathy for what Ukrainians are going through, or not that we don't believe that they have a right to defend their country and, you know, their borders, but it's like, you know, how do they win, right? Like, what's the plan? Kind of, what do you make of that as someone who, served in sort of, you know, an endless war?
Ukraine is actually, you know, I always said about Afghanistan, the end result is the same, whether we stay in Afghanistan for 20 more years or we leave tomorrow. The withdrawal obviously would have been different. But so I feel the exact same way about Ukraine. The outcome will still be the same. We can pump Ukraine full of endless amounts of money, you know, kill another generation of Ukrainian men. The outcome will still be the same when the money eventually dries up. It's reckless. It weakens our own defenses here in the United States, on the home front, and against other adversaries that we have around the world. And just as you said, Ukraine absolutely has the right to defend itself. And it has proven that it wants to. It doesn't mean that we need to fund it, and be a part and be like fighting a proxy war against Russia. It's very aggressive on United States' side. And provocative, in what most would describe as a regional conflict.
You know, and I think there's a distinction between that and then, you know, giving money to Israel, a longtime ally who is clearly winning the war against, you know, Hamas, and is, you know, seemingly not too far away from, you know, completing their goal of eradicating Hamas from Gaza. So it's like, you know, for me, it's just the common sense, what is achievable, you know, what can actually happen. But you said something earlier that I wanted to dig into, about Pride Month on military bases. What can you tell us about what happens during Pride Month on military bases, and kind of what impact does that have on morale?
So you have one. In terms of morale, it's like priorities, right? Like the military is going to, they allow their libraries to be taken over by drag queens, and they do these like burlesque style dances, which they advertise as family events, and they're used MWR money, which is military money, and in order to host these things. And It's crazy to me. Like, here's what I want to say. And commanders usually facilitate these. They sign off on these events, that they allow like these events to happen on their military installations. So my question is like, they want to go do these like drag queen shows on military installations during June, during Pride Month. Because they, of course, have to say that they respect everyone's right to do anything they want to do, and how that somehow makes the military stronger. You always hear that talking point anytime anybody brings up LGBTQ plus whatever Pride Month. It's like, okay, so who, like, I want someone to try this. Who can then say, I'm going to promote at a library on base a Women's History Month, and we're going to invite a bunch of strippers to perform at a library, and it's a family event, everyone can come. Do you think that that would happen, or do you think that there would be a ridiculous outcry of women empowerment and how that's like inappropriate? That's probably what would happen. But for some reason, you attach the word pride to it, and the military looks the other way because they're terrified of being called, you know, like non-inclusive or getting fired. They probably would fire people then if they said no to some of those events. But it's just, you know, my example is to just show how ridiculous it has become in terms of what they think is appropriate and should be allowed. Versus if you compare it to something else that most people would be like, well, you can't do that. But everybody looks the other way to all this pride stuff. The military is also using drag queens as social media influencers. The Navy has a drag queen, for real, that promotes the Navy.
It's you know, and you wonder why, you know, red-blooded men don't want to enlist and sign up for that. That's not exactly something, you know, they aspire to be.
And how about, like, even back to my point of the Secretary of the Army being fearful about women or recruitment of women and retention of women? It's like, now that transgender women, so men who are saying that they are women, now they can shower in women's locker rooms, you know, after PT now. They can use women's sleeping quarters, use women's bathrooms. Like, don't you think that is going to hurt female recruitment a little bit? Like, if I knew that, like, oh, I had to go boot camp, to, you know, as the first step of becoming a helicopter pilot, but I had to go and shower with men, like, that's probably going to have a significant impact on my decision of me moving forward with joining the military.
Absolutely. I mean, I would feel the same way. You know, before we go, obviously, in having served, examining all the issues, you know, talking to so many veterans, just like yourself, what changes, you know, let's say Trump gets in, you know, God willing, what should he do? You know, what changes do you want to see? Like, what things could be changed that would have an impact on, you know, morale and military recruitment? What would you like to see get done?
So there's a couple of things. The first is, you know, rip up every single executive order as it applies to the military from the Biden administration. It's going to require a coordinated effort from POTUS, Congress, SecDef, all the service secretaries, the COCOM commanders, to then push policy that says we are going back to a meritocracy. The best people are going to be selected for positions. We're not focusing on people's race and gender anymore. We're focusing on the mission. Get the military back to that. And then work on that culturally as well. The second thing is accountability. And this would require working with Congress in the NDAA, which is probably slashing 50% of the generals or the flag officers that exist today. They are a significant part of the lack of accountability culture that's been created in the military. And that has to change. These double standards at the top, in the two-tiered justice system where they, you know, the military elite can get away with absolutely anything, that has got to change. And so I think that that's a good starting point. I do think it is going to be like the whoever is tasked with that, whoever the Secretary of Defense is, it's going to be the challenge of a lifetime. It will not be easy, but it's what has to be done to reverse course of our military.
You know, Amber, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
I would say that, you know, what is the implication of a failing military, of a military in a downward spiral? And I would say the sustainability of the all-volunteer force. We have been lucky enough as a nation. Most nations around the world cannot do this. They do not have all volunteer forces. They do not have people who believe in their nation enough to just be able to fight in, you know, multiple theaters of operation around the world with an all volunteer force. We've been lucky enough as a nation to have that since, you know, just after the end of Vietnam. There's a reason that the Selective Service still exists today, and that every man within 30 days of their 18th birthday is supposed to sign up for the Selective Service by law. So I was, and they actually just had a, they did a report, basically a congressional driven report on whether the draft was, or the Selective Service was still needed. And if women should sign up, and they found that women did not need to, but yes, Selective Service was still necessary in case of a national emergency, which in other words means a war that they need to replace combat positions with, and what a lot of people refer to as the draft. That's not something that is that far-fetched. If we were ever to get involved in any type of direct war with China or Russia. And I think people need to realize that that is what is at stake here. That is why we cannot afford to have our military become more woke and become, as a result, become weaker, continue to get weaker. So that's just something to think about the long-term effects of where the military is headed today. Is like, I would be very nervous with the conflicts we see around the world. And if I had a high school aged son right now.
That's a great point. I'm glad you got that in. Amber Smith, Unfit to Fight, How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. Everyone go out and get it. Amber, you're a friend. I'm so proud of you. This is really interesting stuff. I know it'll be a huge success.
Thanks so much, Lisa. I appreciate it. Good to talk.
That was Amber Smith out with Unfit to Fight, How Woke Policies Are Destroying Our Military. Go out and get it. Appreciate you guys at home for listening every Monday and Thursday, but you can listen throughout the week. I want to thank John Cassio, my producer, for putting the show together. Until next time.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.